today's episode of Rainer on Leadership, your online home for leadership lessons and advice from the local church. I'm your host, Jonathan Howe, and as always, I'm joined by Tom Rainer, the president and CEO of Lifeway Christian Resources.
These podcasts typically are fun. They're enjoyable. Jonathan and I have a jovial time interacting with one another. Sometimes I cut him down. Sometimes you respond.
Never.
Most of the time you don't.
Yes.
But it's always good. This time this topic is pretty serious.
Yeah.
And it's something that really calls for a lot of sobriety and a lot of thought, and even more than that, a lot of prayer. And that's when, what do we do as church leaders when someone on staff has a moral failure? And that moral failure could be an adulterous affair. That could be a number of other things. But the reality of it is, it's something that is stunning to the congregation, hurtful to the congregation. And I'm hopeful that in the context of our short podcast today, we'll be able to offer some guidance and direction in that particularly tough time.
Yeah, this is a pretty heavy topic for a 20-minute podcast. And hopefully we will be able to manage to get through a lot of the topics that come up with this. A real quick question before we start. Have you ever been on a staff where you had to deal with this?
Yes, I have been on a staff where I've had to deal with this. And I have also dealt with many in churches who have had to deal with this as well.
Yeah.
So I only served as a pastor of four different churches. And by the way, I recently did a blog post of 9 stupid things I did when I was a pastor. Uh-huh. And so
you were able to narrow that down, huh?
No, I did not narrow it down. I just said it's not an exhaustive list. And there you go, being a smart aleck right away.
Sorry.
You just had softball.
That was the easiest one you've given me a long time.
And you hit it out of the park, and I was allowing you to do so. But this was one particular case that I think I handled okay as a pastor, but it's never easy.
No.
It's absolutely never easy.
One of the hardest things that any pastor probably has to deal with.
Absolutely.
All right, number one on the surviving a moral failure on a church staff, the list here we have, number one is to be as transparent as possible.
There is really an inclination to keep things confidential,
yeah.
keep things private, say as little as possible. I fully get that. You do not want to get in the sordid details of sexual failure, moral failure, whatever the case may be, and that is understandable. But a church, like any other organization, is going to talk, and they will have their own agenda of things that they will be saying and conversations that will be happening before and after and on social media, by email and by text. So the best thing that someone can do is to be as transparent as possible. I know of a pastor not too long ago with a worship leader was in moral failure, and he just got before the church and he said, "Look, I want to talk to you as a church about this. I'm not going to get into details, but there has been a moral failure," and he gave the name of the person. He said, "I'd appreciate you not getting into these details, but just to understand that this is a time of prayer. This is a time of true sobriety in the church, and we need to be focused more on being pastoral than we need to be gossiping or talking." And he said, "I want to tell you as much as possible, but that is really the extent that I'm going to tell you, and I hope you understand." And it went over very well. It went over. He was transparent, but he did not get into unnecessary details, at least from the perspective of hurting persons in the family.
Number two is to understand the different parties impacted by the failure. It's not usually just one or two people that are impacted. It's a lengthy list a lot of times.
Gosh, you think of the list. Let's go to, say, the worship leader. There would be the wife.
Uh-huh.
There would be the children. There would be friends. Mm-hmm. There would be the music ministry, whether it's a choir.
The entire choir, orchestra, whatever. Yeah.
Everybody would be impacted. There would be key leaders in the church that had leadership relationships that they were somehow connected with him in the course of everyday church life.
And then the staff.
The staff, totally, because all of a sudden now staff life is disrupted. It will never be the same. That person who was there just a few days ago is no longer there.
Yeah.
And so there's so many people who are impacted. And that's
just in the church.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, you step out of the church and you get the personal lives and all that stuff too.
Yeah.
Basically the only person that's not impacted in a church is the person who doesn't show up, the member that doesn't show up.
That's really
true. That
doesn't
really know what's going on.
That oxymoron, the inactive church member, would be the only one that's not impacted somewhere. So this is not just one, two, or a few people impacted. This is a issue that has a significant impact.
Each to their own degree.
Yes.
But significant impact nonetheless.
Absolutely, across the board. And when you begin to understand that, you understand some of these other points that we're going to make, is that true pastoral ministry is required.
Yeah. Number three is to demonstrate grace in the midst of fallenness.
There is a temptation to go one extreme or the other.
Yeah.
One extreme is to say, shouldn't we just forgive everybody?
Yeah.
And there should
be okay.
It'll be okay. There are no consequences to that. Aren't we a grace-filled church? I know of an instance, and I think it's far enough in the past where I can give this, where the pastor, after a moral failure, stood up before the church, confessed his moral failure, and then he said, I thought we were a grace-filled church.
Yeah. Please turn in your Bibles, too.
No. But this is what he said. He said, everybody that wants to be a part of a grace-filled church, stand up and follow me. And they started another church in the town. So that's a little case.
Okay, wow.
That is a case of...
They can't see it. My mouth is wide open.
We need video sometimes for this.
Stunned over here.
That's grace to an extreme. That's
wow.
that's really not grace.
That's licentiousness.
That's licentiousness. That is approving of immoral behavior. And sadly enough, a number of them went with him, and he started a church not too far down the road from
New
the
Harmony
church,
Baptist
from the church where he left. But then there's the other extreme.
Yeah.
And it's the extreme of legalism, where we never have anything to do with anyone. We write them off. We don't communicate with the spouse anymore. They are to use the metaphor that is in popular literature, they have the adulterous A upon them, and it's upon the
Scarlet
whole family.
Letter.
Yep. And so I'm really shocked that you know your literature.
That was the worst book I read in high school. I absolutely despise Hawthorne.
Well, but thanks for that literary comment,
sorry.
Jonathan. And
that's the only reason I know that one.
It's the worst book he read in high school. It was probably one of four he read.
The entire
time he was in high school. So there's either extreme, but Christ-like grace is forgiving, but it understands that sin has its consequences. And that's the balance that we need. Forgiveness, love, but understanding their consequences to sin.
So in the example you gave earlier, we'll just stick with that since... You know, we've been talking about it a little bit, the music minister or whatever minister it may be. What would a typical consequences, if this happens, what's the first few things, the first couple of steps a pastor takes?
Usually is to get other people involved. You don't want to do this on your own. Mm-hmm. And so if the pastor learns about it by himself, there's no one else involved, then he would have to bring key leadership, some key elders in, some key deacons or whoever in the church. Go and confront that person in a Matthew 18 type of way. I guess there's a possibility it could be a mistake, but it's not usually.
Yeah.
I mean, mistaken information. And then to let that person know that his time at the church is now over, particularly if it's a serious moral failure, and that they want to work with him on some type of transition and be kind to him in the transition. Let that person know what they're going to tell the church so that... they will be prepared for it. Hopefully, call for repentance and see that there's some type of remorse or repentance that is involved. And that can be the process that begins restoration, whether it's restoration to church membership or whether it's restoration to fellowship or whether it's restoration to the position. There are different opinions out there about whether that restoration should take place. But in any case, it should take time.
Speaking of restoration, the comment I've heard is that they might be able to be restored to the ministry, but their ministry at this particular church, for lack of better words, has been quote-unquote ruined.
Yeah, and that is one perspective. There are some who have the perspective that vocational ministry is over for that person.
Oh, that's a good point, too. I've seen that, heard that.
And then there's some that think that person should be able to come back to that church as well after restoration. Our purpose is not to get into the debates about what happens in restoration. Our purpose is to say this is what happens in moral failure, and here are some of the options that churches take.
All right. Number four is to understand that the church will go through stages of grief. There's denial, anger, bargaining, depression, and acceptance.
Yeah, and that's the classic Kubler-Ross stages of grief. And I'm not saying that that's a perfect one. That's obviously a secular understanding of grief, but it's still a pretty good one. There's denial. I cannot believe this has happened.
That would never happen in our church.
It seems surreal, and it would not happen with that person or that family. They seem like such a wonderful, happy family. How could that ever happen? It's not the denial of the reality of it. It's the denial of being able to believe it and accept it.
Yeah.
The next stage is anger. And it doesn't take long for a congregation to go from denial to anger.
I can't believe he did that.
Yeah, it's gone from I can't believe he did that to I can't believe it happened to I can't believe he did that.
Or she.
Well, we were using an example of a male. I'm not trying to be exclusive of one gender or the other. There's just this anger that begins to come forth. And that here's a warning stage, and we'll mention this in number five, but that anger can be directed at the wrong person.
Oh, yeah.
And so you need to be prepared for that if you are in church leadership. But there's anger, and then there's bargaining. Well, maybe we can work this out. And in the particular example that I'm at least most frequently familiar, that was the attitude of some of the congregation. You know, I understand he did that. Maybe we can just talk through this and work it out.
We all sin.
Yeah.
You know, is that really any worse than...
They're going on the consequences and not thinking about
Nobody
the consequences.
Got hurt. I mean, well, maybe they did. But
They did. A lot of people got hurt. But there's the bargaining. And then many churches go through either a lull or what Kubler-Ross calls a depression. They are down. The pastor of this particular church said for months there was a lull in
just
the church.
Like a cloud hanging over the church kind of thing, just attitude-wise.
And they don't often understand why. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that event happened several months ago, but why do things just seem not to be going well here?
I miss so-and-so.
Yeah, I miss so-and-so, and as we'll talk about in a few minutes, I miss those other people who were somehow connected, who left the church during this time.
And finally?
Acceptance.
Yeah.
How long does acceptance take?
You know, it depends.
It depends. That's a favorite response of Rainer on Leadership. It depends, but I would say this.
Might be the official response of Rainer on Leadership.
Yeah, that needs to be our new slogan.
Yes.
Come to us. Our answer is, it depends. That's the whole contextual thing. Most of the time, though, it takes at least a year. At least a year. And so if a pastor or other staff person is waiting to get past this, it can be a year. It can even be two or more years.
Probably the more high profile both the person and the incident is,
right,
the longer the acceptance takes.
Right, and therefore the more people impacted, the more chatter there is in the community that just keeps it stirred up. So all of those things affect ultimately the length of the time before acceptance takes place, but acceptance eventually will take place. Here's just a little note. More pastors get let go or they decide to leave on their own during this grief stage than any other stage related to a pastor leaving.
And that's probably because of number five.
Yep, that is.
Be prepared to be the object of anger.
Perfect segue. The person who had the moral failure is no longer there. The person who may have been in an affair with him or her is no longer there. We can't get mad at them, so who is the convenient target? Many times it's the pastor. Mm-hmm. If it happens, say, in the worship leader, it might be someone else in the worship ministry, someone in the children's ministry. It may be someone there. But be prepared to incur anger, even wrath, because I shouldn't say they need a target, but they have these emotions and they take them out.
They need an outlet.
Let me ask you this. Have you ever been in a situation in your marriage? I'm going to do a little marriage counseling here. Where you've had a frustrated spouse, or maybe you're the frustrated spouse.
It's more than likely the other way around.
Well, I don't know which way you're talking about the other, because I mentioned
both. She's going to be frustrated with me.
Okay, so she's going to be. All right, but let's say that she is frustrated at something else outside of you. The minority of time.
That's probably me, then. I'm frustrated at something, but then I take it out on her.
Yeah, you've had a bad day with Rainer.
Never.
And he's had these unreasonable demands. He wanted to know why you weren't up at 1 o'clock answering his text messages or something of that effect. You wake up the next day, you're in a bad mood, and you take it out on Beth. You ever done that before?
Yeah.
Okay.
Since she's probably listening.
No, she doesn't.
She's found these.
Oh, she's...
Yeah, I told her we were talking about her, so now she's listening.
Hi, Beth. Jonathan loves you very much. So you become the object of the anger. It really happens in churches, and the church members don't know why. there's just a sense of frustration that is building up within them, and they are taking it out on someone else, and they don't even know why. So all of a sudden, the things that you as a pastor or staff member were doing so well, they're scrutinized more closely. You're not doing them quite as well. You're not seen in the bright light of near perfection that you may once have been. You're now seen in a light that has been clouded by this moral failure.
What kind of statements manifest themselves like for this anger? Like, what's an example of what somebody would say to a pastor, maybe not meaning to do it, but it happens?
I cannot stand, well, maybe let's rephrase this. I just totally disagree with the direction you're taking us. It becomes a vision objection because the trust has somewhat eroded with that pastor somewhat. You are not visiting enough. You're not going around to seeing people. You're not friendly enough. You're not pastoral enough. All of those are manifestations of that particular anger.
Maybe if you spent more time in the office, things like this wouldn't happen. Or if you checked in more on whatever ministry.
Yeah. If you really cared for your staff, this may not have happened to that person. All those are possible manifestations. The key is, the staff who remains, the pastor and staff who remain, are no longer seen in a positive light by many people.
We kind of touched on this one earlier, but recovery and acceptance is usually longer than we anticipate.
Yeah, and I got ahead of myself because I said I was talking about the 1 year. Many church leaders, and I'm talking about lay leaders, pastors, and staff, they have in their minds their own idea of how long this is going to take. Mm-hmm. And once the person has been out of the visibility of the church members and the leadership for some time, the clock starts ticking, and usually 3 or 6 months later, they say, we should be fine.
But you're not. It's been 90 days.
And even if they're not explicitly thinking that, they are implicitly, subconsciously thinking that, but the church is still in the lull. And so you start assigning other problems that may not be related to why the church is in the lull. The church is in the lull because of the moral failure. And so the recovery and acceptance allow that several months, even a year, sometimes even longer time than many anticipate.
Number 7 is that the church will likely lose members. We kind of touched on this already.
The church will lose members for different reasons. One time, for one reason, some church members will disagree with the decision to dismiss the person. Mm-hmm. They will say, why didn't you give them a second chance? Why didn't you show grace? Why didn't you demonstrate forgiveness? Another reason is embarrassment. There may be people who are connected closely somehow to that particular leader, and they're just, because they no longer can identify with another leader, they walk out. Another that we don't really have a good grip on in many of our churches after a moral failure is during the lull. Mm-hmm. Many people say there's just not something right here. Yeah. And they'll start slowly drifting away, may attending less frequently, and they may end up in another church, and sometimes they drop out altogether.
Yeah. Number 8, the church's character is redefined.
This is one that we often miss in surviving a moral failure. Once you have had a moral failure on your staff, the church's entire character and definition has shifted. It is no longer the same church it used to be. Let's use an analogy, it's a painful analogy. But once a couple divorces, the family is never the same as it once was. And in that same respect, the church is not the same as it once was. This is both a challenge and an opportunity for leadership to redefine who we are. We are now trusting in God more than ever. We are now going to demonstrate grace more than ever. We are now going to have higher accountability more than ever. And the list goes on and on. Or you can let the crisis define you. Mm-hmm. And we're the church that had the failure. We're the church that went into the lull. We're the church that didn't have good systems in place. Yeah. It's an opportunity for leadership to redefine for better or for worse.
And that kind of leads us to our final point here, is that strong leadership is required.
There's few situations that require as strong a leadership as moral failure. Moral failure is something that takes place too often in too many churches, but too few leaders are equipped to handle it. One of the key things during all of this is to be a person of prayer and not to be someone who depends upon your own strength or power, but on the power of prayer and the power of God to see yourself through this. Another thing is to have someone with whom you can trust, converse on a regular basis, so that you have not only accountability, but you have someone where you're able to share some of your own frustrations. And another thing that you have to do as a strong leader, particularly if you're the pastor, you have to get before the congregation and the pulpit and other public settings and assure them that we are moving through this. Even if you're not explicitly bringing back the moral failure, you're giving them a vision of something that God is going to do positively for the future.
A couple questions before we close out here. What if it's the pastor instead of a subordinate minister?
Well, first of all, somebody has to step up. There's an immediate leadership void at a time of greatest leadership needed. Mm-hmm. And so it may be natural. It may be an associate pastor, an executive pastor. It may be leader among the elders or the deacons. Someone has to step up immediately because the leadership vacuum is either going to be filled with despair, anger, or a positive move forward. Someone has to step up and move positively. Communication is key. That's one thing that we really didn't touch on here. But communication is key, particularly when it is a pastor who has had moral failure. And you're just saying, we're going to move on. We have formed a search committee, or we've contacted Vanderbloom and Search Group, or we're moving forward. We're grieving over this situation, but as a church, we're moving forward. The key thing is for someone to step up.
All right, next question is, it is somebody who underneath the pastor, and you have that ministry now that has no leader, and they're hurting in that ministry. Say it's a children's minister, youth minister, whatever, music. How quickly do you try to start filling that void? What's your next step, I guess, as a pastor, just from an organizational point of view?
Well, that's the famous it depends answer. I would think that it would be a factor of the longevity of the person who was there and how deep the relationships are and how wide the web of connections are. Okay. And the longer they've been there, the more the relationships there are, I think the longer time you need. In other words, it's a time to call for someone in an interim position. Yeah. And if it's someone that's been there short term, is not very well connected through the church, you can move quicker on that. But again, give it time, and you'll know the time according to the nature of the person who has had moral failure.
Okay. Final question.
Yeah.
What about hiring someone who has a moral failure in their past?
Well, there are several things you have to do.
This is a big, it depends. But
well, certainly it is it depends, and I'm going to kind of go through some of the things on why it depends. First of all, is it something that has marred that person in the sense of your church for vocational ministry for good, for life? In other words, does your church believe that that type of moral failure no longer qualifies him or her for any ministry? And there are different churches that will have different perspectives mm-hmm. on that. Secondly, thorough background check, including going back to the church where the moral failure took place and asking a lot of questions. Third, being very transparent with the church as you are bringing this person on. Let them know, because they will find out one way or another.
Oh, yeah.
And you might as well let them know. And if the person who is a prospect coming on is uncomfortable with the church doing that, then they don't need to come, because that needs to be stated up front. I don't want to make it too analogous to this situation, but when you're filling out an application and there's a little question there, have you ever committed a felony, you know, on the application? Don't say no if you have.
No,
because they'll find out anyway.
Yeah.
It's better to go on and give full disclosure and then let the people decide according to what you said. So those are some major steps that need to be taken.
Vanderbloom and Search Group is the premier pastor search firm dedicated to helping churches and ministries build great teams. They've helped hundreds of churches just like yours find their church staff and are uniquely geared to help you discern who God is calling to lead your church. Find out more about Vanderbloom and Search Group by visiting westaffthechurch.com. That'll do it for today's episode of Rainer on Leadership. Any final closing thoughts?
I appreciate you, the listening audience, understanding us during this time and understanding the situation. It's not an easy topic. Just want to segue a little bit, and it's not necessarily a natural segue, but we have a ministry that it is now available. The link is here, and it's a ministry where every month you're getting three deliverables sent to you so that you can, on a regular basis, hear from us about some of these issues on a deeper dive. So Jonathan, Church Answers is live, yep. And they can sign up now and get a minimum of 36 different videos or white papers or deeper dive information on a regular basis. So
yeah, you can find out more by visiting churchanswers.com for that. And also there's a free 3-session video series right now on leading change. that's available that you can check out online for free at churchanswers.com.
One of my favorite courses I have ever taught is on leading change, and churches, as much as any other institutions, need to know how to lead change.
Thanks for joining us today on Rainer on Leadership. Be sure to subscribe on iTunes and visit us online at tomrainer.com.